Welcome to podcast number 12. Today's guest is Keely Forsyth. After 20 years as an actress in various roles in Happy Valley, Coronation Street and Heartbeat, she suffered a serious illness and re-emerged as an avant-garde musician. Her album Debris was released in January 2020, was described as arid and beautiful by Pitchfork magazine. It's a melancholic and stirring piece of work, showing the influences of Scott Walker and Nico. On today's podcast, we discuss Adam Smith and the Pay What You Feel Cafe, feeding people for nothing, dealing with dark moods and depression, combining the voice and the body to make music, the joys of Christine and the Queens, Wet, 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 working with Matt Bourne, the work ethic, and being in full makeup for 12 hours in Guardians of the Galaxy. I've only met you once, I think, up in Newcastle. That's as far as I can remember.
Well, we have met. Should we just start? We did meet. I think the first time I met you was with a good mate of mine, Dan Weldon. And he brought, you were doing a gig in a cafe in Leeds. It was one of those, it's a community cafe and they use food that's been donated I came with Dan.
Yeah. It was the Pay As You Go cafe, the junk cafe in Armley.
Yeah.
And that was run by a guy called Adam Smith. And he was just this guy, a young guy who'd sort of lived in Leeds, and he got into some bad habits, went to Australia, became a chef, and he wanted to do something with his life. He got really kind of stirred up, and he met this guy, and he said, well, this kind of, I don't know, guru, some guy, and he says, what you need to do is sort your own backyard out before you start trying to sort other people's, you know. So he came back to Leeds. And he thought, I'm gonna feed people. And that was it. And he said, I'm just gonna feed people. And me and Johnny played in this little Trinity shopping centre in Leeds. Mm-hmm. And he had a caravan on the fifth floor. They had like this kind of like street food thing that was going on. And he was there, and he said, I'm Adam Smith, and this is the, you just pay what you want. And he used to try and get people, like homeless people, coming up to sort of eat from the cafe, but there was loads of the security that stopped them. So he said, it was just kids, rich kids coming up and taking burgers off me, you know. But he said, I'm setting up this cafe, and I just gave him 20 quid. I thought, fuck it, this is genius.
Yeah.
Because it's love.
Absolutely.
It's just love and it's genius. It's not about, well, I'm going to try and sort of educate these people. Yeah. I'm not going to give them a fishing rod and stuff and let them start their own kind of farm or something. I'm just going to feed people.
Yeah, and
it was just, it went straight past everything else. It was so simple and so...
Yeah, because that's that's when the powerful things happen, when the human mind becomes very kind of, when you reduce it and becomes very simple in that kind of, and it does bring it back, like you say, to those things that we are, which is on both duality, love and the opposite of. It is. It's really important because we do put pressure on ourselves to be, to be things, and even when we want to help, we try and kind of see it as an investment into the future, and that's kind of not what true exchange is, really. It's just really special.
Yeah, it was, and I can remember because I wasn't feeling very happy in my head that time. I was like quite sort of low, and I just kind of dragged myself through that performance and danced. I said, I could see you're a bit, you weren't quite sparking, in the eye. But I really enjoyed...
But that, I remember that was very inspiring for me because I was kind of on a road to trying to understand, what this thing was that I felt I had no control over, this kind of, this emotion, mental kind of place, which I personally would go in and out of. And, and so I remember we kind of shared a little bit about it we went to a pub, only for about an hour or so after. I'm sure it was the same day. and it was weirdly that, and I remember it because it's kind of, Wheeler the first time, I think we were just having a very kind of open and honest conversation. And it started to, yeah, I felt that there was, yeah, just like, we talked about it a bit, but it was like acceptance in, yeah, in when you are not, it's not about not feeling right, but just kind of, you know, just trying to equally sit with those feelings. And I think I remember sharing that I do have the same, the same kind of cloud or whatever that kind of comes over me. But it was still, yeah, but we were there out, sat, talking about it. So it didn't feel like it was, you know, this mysterious thing. It kind of became kind of quite just a human thing of, yeah.
That's very straight. Well, so that must have been before you were, maybe before you started to record.
Yeah. This was before. And the reason I think why Dan brought me, because we talked about me doing music, but again, it didn't feel, you know, the music was never done as an intention. I'd come from being an actress, and that's all about, you have to be quite clear and confident about your approach, but music was different. Music was it was something that was a lifestyle thing, so I could never, in order for me to try and use it for something, never kind of felt right. But he said, he told me that he'd met you and that he felt really inspired by what you were doing, and we went to the cafe. He says, I think that you will really like just the way that, yeah, it is, it's everything that's done, and there's something quite improvisational about it, because it has to be, because it's what is going on in that moment for that person.
And
so then that made sense. It was like, okay, so it became more about, yeah, a response to your environment, which is how my music then started to feel, like it was becoming more of a thing, because I didn't want to just get up and, you know, sing. I didn't feel that there was an entertainment in it. I felt that there was just, it was kind of necessary. And it was, yeah, so that's why Dan brought me along, because he thought that I would enjoy the performance.
Yeah.
And it was, even though I know you were saying that you kind of was feeling a certain way, but that was perfect, because it was, I've done performances where I've not, I know I have, something is off.
Yeah.
And initially, you know, you kind of think you don't want to show that. You want to, but then I've started to think, well, this is, I can only use what I have. And so, you know, I've done performances where I've had to stand in the corner and face the wall, because I can't really suppress those things that are going on. Yeah. So it becomes about a kind of internal universal love and acceptance, like the feeding of yourself.
I read an article by Marty Pellow from Wet.
Oh yeah, I did, in The Guardian.
And there was just one line that struck me. He was talking about kind of stopping drinking and drugs.
Yeah.
And he just said that he met these two vets, these Vietnam vets, and one of them said, "What's with a smile?" You know, and he realised that he didn't have to be kind of, yeah.
Gosh.
Kind of Jack the Lad, sort of like the wit, you know, the kind of the wag, the wit, you know, that he didn't have to have this kind of front. He could just, he didn't need to, you know, people, you don't have to try and kind of force your way into somebody's life, you know, by being appealing and stuff, you know, that people will come to you. You don't need to seduce them, you know.
Yeah.
So that's that kind of, that hit me, and that, because I've sort of had the last few weeks, last maybe 6 weeks, where I've just felt quite sort of flattish and stuff, and I thought, well, I'm not the full shilling, I'm not the full full tank.
Mm-hmm.
But then that was quite kind of reassuring, because I thought, well, so what? Because I can still produce some wonderful stuff. I was drawing Easter cards for my kids and stuff. Mm-hmm. I've got kids in London and wherever, up in Dewsbury here, and I sat and spent a day drawing these pictures, and I did a picture of a shuttlecock because I couldn't think of anything else to do. And I said to, as an Easter, I was going to draw this cat. We've got like three cats, and the cat kept moving. I started the cat to go, oh. And So I got the pen out, I thought, I'll draw a shuttlecock.
That's a really lovely thing to do.
So then I Googled a shuttlecock, because I couldn't remember the I thought, it's got these little kind of like grid sort of
but how they...
Yeah, so I sat and drew a shuttlecock in it. And I said, I was going to draw a cat, but I couldn't draw the cat because it moved. Happy Easter. And then, and then also drew like some, I think I did a little ship for my mother with like sort of a sort of, yeah, here we are, we're coming through this stormy sea, the Gallaghers. Nice. We'll get through. And it was just like a little ship with a few. And she says, Michael, I got your card. Oh, God, it's just the last word it was. It was great. Your lovely words. And I think, because I felt so bad, because I'm thinking, I've got nothing to give them but a fucking ship and a shuttlecock. But it's still beautiful, even if it's kind of loaded with sadness. Even if it isn't chipper and sparkly, there's still kind of a solace. And a warmth to it, a love to it.
Yeah, I do agree. And I always feel that when I am feeling like that, if I kind of just, and I know sometimes it's easier said than done, don't get me wrong. I've definitely been out in the storms where all you can do is just lay low and curl up for a bit and you just have to, kind of weather it. But I've kind of found that when you do let go of that kind of so-called sadness, that there's actually a real... There's almost like a real kind of, you kind of resonate a higher vibration, but I've kind of felt that there's such a wonderful feeling to it. If you can't, if I've tried to, just let go of trying to resist it, I've gone, gosh, actually the feeling is really wonderful.
If you on stage, it happens. Like, I know when I've kind of messed up on stage and I was going to deliver a line or I had this and I've just gone and I've messed up and I just tell them I've messed up and then there's almost like a congregational sort of and just because you're not being flighty and you're not there on the high wire and you're not sort of standing on one toe, you're on the floor and you don't look particularly dignified, your knickers are showing, but we love you now. We're not worried about all the other, how clever you are, how many sort of degrees or this. We like the fact that sort of you're messed up like us.
Yeah, there is something in that. And I think the more the world is getting kind of connected as well, it's like the more I appreciate when someone is just talking about their own. Yeah, when it becomes, there is a word to thought. But... because everything has, to many extents, everything you want to say to someone has been said, really. It's just, I'm always drawn to people that, are just kind of, they're giving you an insight into this.
Mm. Yeah, because it's the same words. I mean, you use words like, you've got words. You've got hold on, fold in, and pray. I was just writing some stuff like, and now I find a better place, and you go on, and you just find a better place. And they're just words. I mean, they're just not kind of. They're not like skillful. They're not kind of wildian or something. They're just fucking simple. They're just simple words. And hold on, fold in, and play. You can see that.
Yeah.
You know, I can picture it. I can picture sort of. And I never meant to hurt you. And it's just, I mean, the thing is, I was listening to you to last night. I think there was a Crossing Border Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's you on there, and your hair's really long, and it's black and white.
Yeah, I've got
and it's in a lot of shadow, and there's you and Matt Bourne there. And I'd heard you before I was listening to some of the album stuff, and there's like kind of electronic-y stuff going on. But then there was just on this thing, it was just a crossing board, it was just you and Matt, and it was there was very little going on. He was just playing like sort of a couple of these, and it's on his harmonium. And you were sitting and I couldn't see you. I mean, because basically you had your hair in your face and you're in black, and there was just very little kind of stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
And I could hear this beautiful performance, and because it was visually stimulating as well as orally stimulating. And I was just fascinated by it because it was cinematic. You know, it had I was watching what you were doing with your body and other stuff as well, and I'm thinking, oh, that's, you know, I bet she's good at a disco, I bet she's good at a club. I bet she's, you know, I can see she's got the beat, she's got the sort of...
Did you like it when I fell off the chair?
What is it? I could see that sort of that, because there's, what's the name that to that, the French woman, Ellen and the, she's got a song called Tilt.
Oh, Chris.
Christine and the Queens.
Christine and the Queens. Oh, God. Just seeing her performing, because that was so extraordinary, what she was doing with her body.
Yeah.
And what she was wearing. And she had these, like, big trainers, and she'd have, like, these flat turn-up pants, whatever, and stuff. But, and then she was going to this thing, Tilts, and everybody's tilting. And thinking, oh, you know, you should be singing. You're a singer. Go on, when you're singing, stop this arty fucking nonsense, you know. But I was totally captivated. I think she's a bit greedy, you know. She wants to be a dancer and she wants to be a singer and she wants to be a performance artist.
Bringing it all back, the musical.
But I think that it appeals to me, because I think that there's so much you can do, not just with your voice, but you can sing with your fingers.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And your neck and
and
with stuff around, you pick stuff up and you can chuck it in the air and let it fall.
And I do really like that way of making sound and singing. Is really interesting to me, not just for me, but, you know, watching other people. And I really love Christine and the Queens. Mm. It's funny because when I watched, I think I watched one of Jules Holland thing, and I'm kind of wearing, you know, like wearing similar things, and, you know, this is probably an old voice that reared its head as an actor, you know, you go, oh, I was going to do that.
Yes.
But the more of us who are doing it, the better. Well, I mean, gosh. And
that's a great sign when you just think, oh, damn.
It's like, oh, that was good. But then it was really, and I got kind of obsessed with one of her songs. I used to put it on, actually, just to kind of charge myself, you know, and it really did, that stuff helps. But the physicality of things, again, I don't know whether, because I started to kind of actively make music as an expression of just, like, you know, when things were happening, when one wasn't feeling totally great. So it had to be a physical thing, because when you're in that state of mind, the only way you can get out of it is by moving as well, you know. I found that
you drag yourself out of
it. So you move, so it becomes not just about the voice, it's about the whole thing. This has to be kind of one entity, and that's what makes sense. And it was only kind of through the experiences that I kind of had in later life of feeling, you know, kind of being on other sides of life. And so, yeah, it just, it's the sound and the physicality are absolutely the same thing for me. And it's something that...
No, it's a complete thing. I was watching, because it is, it's not a complete package, that sounds kind of... But it is, there was so much kind of information coming out of that little film that I saw of this crossing border thing, so much, it was almost like listening to the radio, except that there was little flashes of light coming through, flashes of little bits of imagery, tantalizing images. And and Matt Bourne, he really works with you. He really,
honestly,
the thing is, he's so empathetic. Like me and Johnny listens to me, and I listen to him. but Matt Bourne, he's really singing with you.
Yeah, you know. I feel like it's the pleasure is always mine being around him. He is the most generous, talented. He really is. I hate to kind of put too much responsibility on him because he hates to hear it, but I really, meeting Matt Bourne was the start of this whole process of nothing, but I mean, just, you know, yeah, for me.
Because he's a heavyweight. I mean, he can go places that probably a lot of other musicians. And I've heard some other guy playing guitar and somebody else, maybe. But I really like the drone thing. I think that because you're droning, there's like these two things. There's the lower sort of whatever, the pedally drone thing that he's doing, and then there's this thing that you're doing, which is just, it's sweeter. And in bits, but they're really, it's a wonderful, they kind of weave in and out of each other, him and
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they do sit really well together. And it is, he is such a skillful player. And when we did the tours together, I mean, literally most of our songs together, you know, he's just like, so for some, you know, and he's never kind of gone, you know what, can you just get someone else to do it? Because I don't find, he's just committed. He loves kind of, he tells me that he does. Yeah, he just kind of loves being part of it, and the process, and he's absolutely committed to those two notes and finds just his own, and he's quite a performance.
Yeah, because I watched him on the 2001, when I was just looking at the performance he did, the Cafe Otto, possibly, but it was a Perrier Award.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I just had not seen it, so I just put it on. It's really grainy. And you see it then, and he starts off with this really sort of dingly, dingly, dingly high end of the piano. And then he's goes into this strange, I'm thinking, bloody hell, that's fast. You know, and he's all over the shop, you know. And then he goes into these lovely kind of like some kind of Hollywood sort of tune. It's kind of a show tune,
yeah.
But like Smile or something, possibly, you know, like Charlie Chaplin.
It was great because he wants to redo that.
And, I'm thinking, God, and then he was hitting a bell. He had like a little kind of hotel bell. He was going bang.
I've not seen that.
Yeah. So it's just a bit of kind of a bit preposterous, you know. And then there was a little bit of. I think they played some. Could have been from Over the Rainbow somewhere. Some little bit of dialogue. Dreams really come true or something. Something about dreams coming true or something. But he was so. He was so in power. He was so in control on that piano. Yeah. So to watch him there just hitting two notes there and just subsuming himself because the sound is all important to the pair of you. Mm-hmm. You can see it's not about who's going to kind of, you know, who's in the lead. It's like you're making this ball of you know, fury and warmth and love, you know, together.
Oh, it does feel like that. Yeah, I do. I think it's funny how it's kind of worked out because, again, before I was making music with anyone, the reason why it felt impossible was because I was, you know, I didn't. Yeah, because it does. If you're going to share something, I don't just like that what happens on stage. I like to have a real respect and love for someone. It's a, you know, you meet someone with the same energy. It's kind of, it's a good energy that, not that a good energy always translates as what we perceive good to be, but it's an energy thing. So assuming that you're going to, you know, like playing it. I think I had, for years, friends would say to me, well, if you want to do it, just do it, put an advert in and get a band together. And then I would come across as, you know, one of those people that talk about stuff but never do it. And it wasn't that. I felt that it was definitely on my path, but I just had to wait. But it was a different kind of waiting.
Yeah.
And then meeting Matt, and it was like, there it was.
So there was a period between you meeting Matt and you sort of doing telly, and then you making some music, was there?
Yeah, well, I was making music for... probably for about 10 years before I met Matt, but I was doing, I mean, I've still got bits of it, but you know, just collecting sounds and doing spoken word over it, just kind of desperate to find, it was more of a kind of, who am I, you know, what is this kind of impulse to making music.
And I always felt more comfortable singing than talking. There was all, you, when I'd, you know, being an actress as well, though, or even just speaking to people socially. Yeah, I felt more comfortable singing, prolonging. It didn't seem as intense. Words can be quite staccato,
music,
you know?
Yeah, music slips in easier than words.
Yeah.
Because prior to joining my band, with Johnny I did stand-up, I did like spoken word.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be up on stage sort of soaking, I'd be going, a pocket of straws. Stuff, juggling badges, well, yeah, and it's kind of people going, oh man, that's a bit shocking, you know. But it was the level was quite intense.
Yeah.
And then when I got this music, where I got people, it's George Formby, juggling badges, well, yeah, there you go, you know. And it's the music sort of adds like a salve or something, where it's kind of sugared, smooth, and you can get sort of your point across a lot more subversively almost than if you're there saying, you know, I'm dark and dangerous, I am the fool, I am the mighty fool. You know, but if you've got music, I am dark and dangerous, I am the mighty fool. No, you're not. So, you know, it's music came first.
I was thinking that.
Because all my family I just know my aunties. I can just know. I'm watching my 80-year-old aunties and 70-year-old aunties, and they sit there, and all they think about is music. I say, oh God, play us a tune. Just ask my dad to, because my dad was a musician, and he played the flute and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we'd go around. They'd come and visit, and then they'd ask dad to play his flute and do some music, and then they'd all sit there with their hands on their laps, and they'd be drifting off in a reverie.
Mm-hmm.
So. And they were just, I love music. I love it. You know, please God, let me hear this for the rest of you. There's just
true.
A sense of something sacred and something quite sort of all-consuming about.
Yeah, about, and it's not know. About like, I don't know, and especially the older I'm getting, kind of the more I'm really resenting just chat. You know, language is something that is so sacred but we've kind of overused it now. As in, you know, the kind of spoken word, and you know, we talk about. You know, I am into kind of, you know, normal chit chat, but it just, I just kind of feel tired of it. And actually, to fill that space, that it is definitely, because you go into a different place of yourself as well. Talking is kind of quite here, but you know, there's a resonant, and I find that really.
Yeah, but when there's other people sort of involved who are like. Garnishing it, or kind of the noise, like musicians, you become almost like less threatened and less anxious because there's somebody else sharing your thoughts.
And these people
aren't frightened, or they're not kind of disturbed by what you're saying. They're interpreting it, you know, through your words.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And that feels quite, I think that feels really kind of, reassuring, and it means you can just carry on. I'm going to carry on doing this because it's a really lovely feeling, and there's a mood that's happened here.
Yeah,
and people say, oh God, that was a really lovely mood. I've walked away from that, and I feel calmer.
Yeah,
from listening to you know.
Yeah, I do. I completely understand and agree, and that's why. You know, I mean, you have the same, you know, making music with people who you love dearly and who you as people. And I think that's, because I'm not interested in making for the sake of it. It has to become secondary out of the, it's almost a secondary thing to what you feel, you know, in the room with the people that you're with. And yeah, the music is a celebration of that, you know, rather than, to assume that, you know, you just kind of think, right, I'm just going to make music with random people. Yeah, is.
There's musicians and musicians, I think. And
And maybe that's because I'm I mean, I don't.
I don't play an instrument, so I have to always work in this way of being intuitive. I have to, because I have
Johnny was saying in the car, he said, you know, we both have come from different sort of backgrounds, not the conventional musical background. You know, you came from television, you came from performing, and I came from portraits and stand-up, and then got involved with amps and PA systems, and that was so I didn't really have any sort of history of the musical sort of whatever matrix, you know, the language, the clubs, the hierarchy and stuff. I came as an artist. I used to turn up at the Wardrobe in Leeds and get up on stage with Matt Bourne probably and a few other people there, and I used to rip the piss out of them, because I just thought, you know, they think they're so good, they think they're so clever, these, because they know all these diminished fifths and they've got this thing and they've been listening to Thelonious Monk and stuff, whatever. And I get up and say, let's do a song, you know, let's do Bananas. Bananas, it's a musical. Bananas. It goes, bananas, wait. And we go, you know, and they'll be going, oh, it's him again. Every week, turn about.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
So, because...
Yeah, I completely
get it. So it's just, I mean, yeah. So when you first started as a kid, you know, you're doing singing now and you were doing... performing, you know, acting. So what started first of all then as a kid? Was it?
Yeah, that's the same as you really. The music, the singing started first. And I was reading something only recently that actually, you know, although as a kid I was absolutely sure that what I wanted to do, I wanted to be a singer and I wanted to be part of the theatre. And I did that lots as a kid, and then this thing that I read last night about you kind of get to your place through really a process of elimination. You do things and you realize that's not you. And I think with me, I forgot that, and I got into acting and it didn't feel right, but I just you know, kind of kept at it and hoping it would feel right.
So did
instead
you do that?
It would have been a process of elimination. It would have been okay. You know,
so were you acting really, like, were you like a child actor?
I got on my first acting job at 15, and I understand looking back why I continued with it, just because I got an agent and started, and work.
And work was coming your way.
Yeah, so, and I kept thinking, something wasn't right, you know, I'd stopped singing, but I could try and reframe it while I love the theatre, and it's kind of connected, so maybe it would be. But I did some theatre as an actor again. The spoken thing was very odd for me, the surreal thing, because I felt that, how I communicated was with
musically.
Music and voice. So, but, you know, I just kept at it hoping it would feel better. Mm. And if there was a trophy for resilience, then
it's really odd, because sometimes some of us are like cowards. I think, like, I initially, when I was doing my portraits, I met this woman and we got married, or we were going to get married, and she says, you know, what do you want to do? Because I was working on the buildings, shoveling concrete and stuff.
Yeah.
And she says, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be an RE teacher. And she went, well, off you go.
Off you go.
So, and I felt really embarrassed, because I just thought, I'd like to be an RE teacher. And I went off and I did studies, and I did like a degree and stuff, and I ended up at Trinity Hall Saints at Leeds, and blind, 3 or 4, I was writing essays. I'd come from the buildings, awful agency work, crap jobs, you know, mindless, crap pay, just hand to mouth, biting my nails every day. And then I'm sitting down writing essays on monasticism and Sufism and feminist theology, and my God, this is amazing, you know. But then, and I was really enjoyed the classroom as well, because I'd get in the classroom and I'd just go for it. I mean, but it was a performance, it wasn't really a lesson. There wasn't any aims and objectives, you know, because the teacher said, what was the point of that lesson that you just did there, Michael? I said, well, we were just talking about, we were talking about the synoptic God, whatever, about
yeah.
And then, but then it went, why did you why do you put that hat on then and start sort of spinning it around on your head? I said, well, because, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway. You were
taking the lessons.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was teaching. So I was in the classroom doing sort of. I hadn't finished my.
Yeah.
I was still studying and I was doing teaching practice. So I did.
Okay. Yeah.
And then. It got to my final teaching practice and I failed the teaching practice. In the meantime, I was working at night doing portraits on paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife wasn't particularly happy with the idea of me being out wandering around the streets drawing on brown paper bags. You know, she was happy with me being possibly the head of the theology department,
yeah.
You know, sort of the head of whatever. And I realised, and then I failed the teaching practice and it was like, thank God I failed, because I can go out and draw on paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
I do that. Somebody at the door.
Oh, it's a package, is it? Yeah. Let me have a look out the window. Oh, it looks good. I'll get it later.
But anyway, just saying that I bottled it. I mean, I'm a bottler. I'm a great bottler. I need to sort of have something to explode. And get picked up. So the thing is, I'm thinking, great, I can carry on. I've got my get out clause to carry on being an artist. And I've just I did have the conversation. I'm not going back to resit this teaching exam. I'm gonna carry on doing these portraits on paper bags, and that was I carried on.
Yeah,
and I realised I had to do that.
Yeah,
and I went on to. But yeah, sometimes life looks after you because you're not strong enough to look after yourself.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I. Yeah, I do believe that. Yeah, I really do.
So anyway, tell us about Happy Valley. What was working in Happy Valley like?
I know, it's funny that I did such a small part on Happy Valley. It's kind of, you know, well, I just did a couple of episodes of it. But
did you have a lot of dialogue to learn?
Well, I mean, not necessarily in that. In the other jobs, it was always kind of the same. I never. And I'm not kind of moaning about it, but I never kind of felt. Yeah, I always felt kind of quite passive going into those things. So at the beginning of my career as an actor, I would really engage and commit to it. I mean, I always did. You know, I went to Oldham Theatre Workshop as a kid, and that kind of instilled a very kind of high state of discipline where I took it seriously. You know, I was a kid that. Used to go to the theatre workshops and everyone else kind of saw it as a bit of a laugh, and I absolutely didn't. The joy came out of the work ethic, and I really loved that. So I, even though I wasn't enjoying being an actor, I was enjoying the purpose of work.
It felt a noble profession.
Yeah, it kind of did. It did. And I definitely need that, because I can just wander, you know, and I do need that kind of structure, but the structure kind of allows me to kind of be quite chaotic within it. But I do, I do enjoy that kind of work ethic. Even like, you know, like when stuff comes in as a musician, like with the Crossing Borders thing, they said I could just sit in my front room and play, but it was like, or, you know, I could hire a room, I could come up with a concept, and I could. You know, and it's always an opportunity to put more work in.
To tax yourself.
Yeah, to do that, and that's...
Yeah.
So the thing of being... So at the beginning of my acting career, I was, kind of really engaged with it. But kind of then by the end, I was learning lines in the car, going to work, you know, just kind of really letting it take the minimal amount of time in my life.
Was this because you were... Also because you're a mum as well?
Yeah, maybe. I think the massive shift came when I had my girls.
How old are they?
They are 12 and 8. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. And I think it was actually going back to work as an actor, because I didn't work for a few years after having them, partly because the work just didn't come in, and I was kind of scared of telling my agent that I was pregnant. And I mean, now I would deal with it in a very different way, but I'd kind of been instilled in with this way of having to please, you know. I think not all actors, but definitely it fed into an insecurity in me that I just had to, as an actor, I had to be there, I had to please, I had to
grab your opportunity.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I was always facilitating someone else's work, and that, for someone now, I've learned that actually that's not the right place for me to be in. So therefore, it did feed into my insecurities of just being very passive and very insecure. So when I was told that, you know, I can't work because I'm now, you know, pregnant, or I just accepted it, and I just, so yeah, I didn't work for a few years, and then going back into it just kind of felt like, yeah, I was going backwards, and then I started to just get less work. I started to enjoy it less, to kind of, you know, to go and pretend to kind of take, you know, driving to work, taking your clothes off to put someone else's on. Actually, I started to think, well, hang on, I find myself more interesting than these people that I'm being forced to
and
play.
You were kind of, and the music was like sort of trickling into
your
life.
Yeah, so the music was happening.
You were waiting for some kind of like bell to ring or something.
Yeah, all that was going on, and I kind of didn't really believe it would, anything would happen. It felt like, you know, all throughout my life, I'd been able to, so as a kid, I wanted to move to London, and I could set goals and somehow try and achieve them, but with the music, I had no idea how that could ever happen. And I was tired, really. I was tired of trying to make something of my life. Yeah. Because what is there, you know? I was just really tired of that. So I just stopped. And
yeah, I suppose if you're, well, you maybe single as well, and
yeah,
other kids, and it does. I mean, I remember starting going doing my portraits, and I had two small kids as well, and there's a certain amount of energy you have,
yeah,
and you lose like your kind of fashion sense, and you just remember going out in awful, just wearing awful trousers for about 5 years, 6 years, just being this kind of blob that goes in the park. With, you know, and yes, and it picks the kids up. Oh. So, you know, I'm basically there, I'm like a big sponge just carrying these children, and I put them down, and then they get them in the car, and it was just feeding them and wiping the bums, telling them stories, and just, you become subsumed.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so any idea of like being the ego, like, well, no, but I'm an artist.
Good yes, God. What am I, you know?
What's going on here? It's like, well, sorry, you've got priority now, it's like kids. So it was quite tricky to sort of juggle that.
Yeah.
But, and it's about just energy. You just don't have enough.
Yeah.
And you kind of try and grab a little bit. You have a window of energy. You think, oh, God, I'll draw a picture. I've got 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. What can I do? Oh, yeah, I'll do that. I'll pick up that hammer and start battering that bit of stone. And it's not a question of kind of scratching your chin and kind of mulling, well, what am I trying to say today? And he's thinking, I'm going to make a banana. You know, I'm going to make a sonic banana. It's just screaming sonic, you know. I'm going to plug it in. It's just, so it's very much about just grabbing the preciousness of life, because you just realise, I've got an hour.
Let's
go. I'm going to play like mad for an hour.
And that has helped now with how I do work, because I do things very I do things very quickly, even with this record that has been made. You know,
and
is it
you and Matt again, or is it
there's me, Matt, and there's a musician, Ross Downs. He was on the Photograph EP. He kind of, his work is digital, so because I wanted to, yeah, the artist who I really love has kind of just kept going with stuff, you know what I mean? Obviously Scott Walker, but all his, you know, like, yeah, it makes sense, all those sounds that are on
his records. So it's, yeah, so it's kind of like a three-way thing now. So Matt Bourne still does play the real, you know, he brings that kind of realness to the world with his instruments. And Ross would, yeah, do the electronic side of things.
So how did you do it then over lockdown? Were you doing this over lockdown? Were you like in a room together, or were you like ringing up each other and zooming
each
other?
Yeah, but that was how the first record was made, just through, I'd send Bourne stuff and then he'd send it back, and then I'd just redo my vocals over the whole thing, and then we'd kind of just have a back and forth like that. So never in the same, we have done some tracks in the same room, but I'm not so, I might be different at it now, but I'm not so good at that. Actually, because I really love performing, because I know there's something real about it. It is happening in real time, and I really love that. But the thing of like performing together to record something, as an actor, I never liked rehearsals because I know I would hold back. I'd hold something back all the time, and I can't kind of, you know. And I've tried to. Yeah, to just think, well, come on, you need to do this. You need to kind of grow up, get over yourself, and kind of just. But so no, I like to be on my own, or yeah.
I just thought of something. There was a woman called Kiki D who was a singer.
Oh yeah.
From Bradford, and she was always an amazing performer, but she was never happy with what she did in the studio. She could never capture.
Yeah.
Her and she was signed to like Motown or something when she was about 18 or 19, you know, they thought she had amazing voices, you know, she was a great soul singer, but she hated the studio. She loved being, she did it out there, with people there, to sort of sing to a sort of like a, whatever.
Yeah, microphone. It is, it's a different process, and
yeah.
I think we're a lot, I think sometimes as a creative, as an artist, whatever, you kind of, it's almost like, people that you know, you're not allowed to like one notion, and you know, like as an actor, that would be the first question. Which one do you like best? And you would feel, I would feel bad saying that, you know, I don't really like doing, but yeah, we are still allowed to have, it's like with any, you know, with any craftsman, they might prefer building this to building that, you know, and it is. Yeah, we are allowed to say, actually, I don't like, it doesn't mean I'm not going to do it, but I don't like that.
Yeah.
And I like this, and I prefer, and I definitely have, I don't like being in a room with people whilst we're making the work. I like to be on my own, because being on my own is the closest that I come to performing. That's the feeling that I get when I'm just on my own. I don't mind being in, I wouldn't go to a studio. I have a studio in my house upstairs.
Right. And that's where you do your, that's where you sing.
Yeah, so that's, I just do it at home.
So you just go, so that's, you can let go, and even if there's no audience, you can still find the stuff.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, although it's such an interesting thing, you know, but when you press record, it's like, a mate of mine did a dissertation on this whole bit of, you know, kind of being in and out of being like recorded. What is that thing that happens to us? Because I'll do something and I'll practice and then I'll press record, and then suddenly I know that it's like this head that rears itself, that's a bit like, oh, come on now, you know, you're up. And I just think, and I try and squash it down and trick myself into just pressing record accidentally, but there really is something.
Yeah.
This
monitor,
which you can utilize.
This prefect who's kind of
saying, make sure
this is perfect.
Oh,
all right.
God, it's so boring. And I just think, yeah, but it's interesting. You know, it's kind of like all this stuff is going, all these conversations are going on in my head as I'm trying to record.
That's it. Well, it's a case of, I don't know, living with them. This dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
there. I've just written some stuff down. I've got Karen Dalton, Iva Cutler, Jackie Trent.
Oh, well, I don't know Jackie Trent.
Jackie Trent is from, she was Tony Hatch and Jackie Trent were like two British kind of songwriters from like the early 60s. And Jackie Trent was a kind of a muscly kind of nice woman who was a singer. She sang on the Val Doonican show and on sort of. She was on general telly. You know, she'd get on Des O'Connor's show and she'd be on the Palladium. And she was Jackie Trent. She was British, but she was quite a strong, forceful woman, and she had a bit Cleo Laney, but commercial.
Yeah.
But she had this very interesting voice, and I was listening to some of it, you know, I was just hearing this, playing your stuff last night, and just listening to sort of things were going off in my head, and I got Shirley Bassey. I got a bit of.
Oh, I'll take a bit of Shirley.
Yeah. So, and also, Karen Dalton as well.
Yeah, I love Karen.
Yeah, and her tone is very smoky and. It's razor sharp. There's something really piercing about her delivery.
Yeah, she's so wonderful.
Yeah, and it's like an oboe or something. So there's something. The voice is more than it's
yeah.
Has this range, this wonderful sort of bigness and purity, but also kind of it's like a Cointreau or something. It just has a richness to it. You know,
yeah.
And so I was getting some of that, you know. I'm not sort of saying, oh, you're an amalgam, but and also there was like, I'm thinking, oh, there's a bit of Scottishness there as well. Sometimes in your delivery, in some of your intonation, there's this brrr sort of.
Yeah, I like doing that brrr. I did a song last night and I was breathe, you know, and I was saying stuff like that, and I don't know where. Or I have started just kind of singing a bit of a bit of a kind of accent, like I'm from some other place.
Yeah.
But you know, we gotta do things to entertain ourselves.
Yeah, and also, yeah, like and also, I suppose you're saying you're talking about this. It's not you, almost. It's this character that you call it she or something. So presumably. You want to keep yourself entertained, and you want to play, and there has to be some surprise there. You have to surprise yourself, and oh yeah, I'm gonna drop. I'm gonna cough now.
Yeah,
because it's your stuff. You can do with it what you like, and the thing is, you're not going to deliver it the same way, are you? As you don't, you know, you're of the same school. You love. The improv, you love.
Yeah, yeah.
And
really
you
do.
And Barney, the same.
Yeah.
Because why would you deliver this, you know, this plate of food that's gone cold now? Because you had it last night, it was great last night, but don't serve that same plate up again tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's a nice
don't heat it again, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the habit.
Yeah. It is, and it's kind of, it feels really good to have this. Peripheral view of this, yeah, of what is going on, because it's, yeah, and you know, we only kind of know these things from contrast, and I say it from being a place many, many years where I just felt that there was something, yeah, that there was a better, you know, there was a becoming that I wanted to do, and usually it's becoming in a reduced way, but to kind of feel that kind of hard work has been done, as in, you know, the hard work of going through something feeling like poo for a long time. That was the kind of hard work, you know, kind of like you're on the front line, and then you just get to breathe a bit and you go, it is a good place to be.
Because you were like, I think you had some health issues, whatever you were like, you became. Dumb, you couldn't speak and you came out the other end, and this happened, this music sort of
career. Yeah, I mean, it's
because your voice, your mouth rebelled, stopped, you didn't want to do dialogue, you wanted to do music.
Yeah, and that was the only thing that I, you know, yeah, that it felt I could make sounds rather than words, but yeah, that was from, I think it was that was from the Guardian article, and if you know, we live in a world of stories, and that seems like an interesting story that you know you get
you lose anything that the ego is related to. You kind of, it's almost like the death of the ego. But so I was very conscious, even though not being able to talk, but it kind of seems like a very romantic notion of, you know, and then, you know, you come out and you make this music. But of course, yeah, life isn't that. It's really scary, and you kind of shout, and then, you know.
So how did you deal with being a mum and just being, you know, were you in the hospital, or were you?
Yeah, you know? No, I mean, I was with my gran looked at. I was brought up by my gran, and my gran looked after me. So I just took myself out of things for a bit. And
your children were like looked after.
The children they have an incredible dad who is.
Oh, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you know Matt, because Matt's very good mates with Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yeah, they have, and he is wonderful. He's a wonderful dad and a wonderful human. But I mean, it was, you know, the kind of whole process was only a few weeks, but nothing kind of special to my story. It does, especially I see it in kind of females, especially that having to, you go through these things, and especially people that do want to spend their time on earth actually expressing stuff. That's how they find out about who they are and the life around them. And when you've not done that for a long time because you've been caring for other people, which is an incredible expression as well, but I just did hit a wall. But I knew the wall was coming, and I just waited for it to hit. You know, the good old-fashioned way.
Yes. It's coming. The wall's coming.
It's coming.
It's moving about 7 miles an hour. You know, I mean, I could get out of the way.
It's
not coming at 60 miles an hour. It's coming at 7.
And, I could get out of the way.
Look out, the wall's coming.
Oh, come on, this might be fun. We might as well see whether it's, I like to go through things, feel stuff.
So what? Tell us about Guardians of the Galaxy. What was that like? What did you do with that?
It was incredibly boring.
My son is like, he says, oh, you know, ask her about Guardians of the Galaxy. And was it Marvel thing, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I was very grateful to get that job because, again, that was I'd not worked for a few years, and that job was like the first job that I had, which kind of then started things off again for me as an actor. So it was after I'd had my second child. So I was really happy to be working. I knew nothing of Marvel. And when you have come off the back of, you know, giving birth, doing all that, and then you have security outside because, you know, you're reading the script, they don't want you to share it because it's very, very important. They wait and you have to give it back to them. You know, I was a bit like, guys, I am interested in whether this is important. And I know, but you know, when those two worlds just come together and... Yeah.
Well, you're old enough to hold your breath.
So, you know, we need it back. It's Marvel. I'd never heard of Marvel. But of course, you know, I respect all things that are being made. But I was really happy to do that job. The people on it were incredibly amazing, generous, lovely. Yeah, it was a wonderful job to do. I had a... My costume, though, was about... My makeup call was probably about a 12-hour makeup call I had. It was intense, because I was covered really from, like, the torso, everywhere. I had my nostrils free. I wore contact lenses even, and just a little slip for my mouth.
God.
And everything else was prosthetics.
God. And did you... Did you make a noise? Were you... Were you doing
I had to do American accent dialogue. And again, you know, the absurdity of it, because I just had kids and I was coming, you know, the absurdity of me kind of sat in an alien thing after 12 hours just thinking, you know, being, you know, ushered over all in black because there were helicopters that were trying to take pictures. And again, of course it is important, but there was a big part of me, you know, maybe the northern part that was going... give up. I don't give up.
So how did you pass the time with this? I mean, if you've got 12 hours sitting there, presumably they were talking to you,
I used to fall asleep sometimes, but I've had a lot of practice in twiddling my thumbs. I'm very good at being left to do nothing. I'm always very happy sitting there with my own thoughts driving myself into the ground.
And you can sit at home and you like your own company then?
So I don't really get agitated with those things. But again, a lot of being an actor is actually sitting as Johnny Rotel, you're sitting around. Oh, yeah.
I do. I mean, I've done Emmerdale, whatever. I'm sitting in the back. I'm crossing the street with an envelope, or I'm in the bar with a pint, and meanwhile, I'm thinking of plans to change the world.
So that's it. Is when I'm working as an actor, that's kind of my rest time. That's when I can just relax, know that things are, things are sorted. Your life is, your life is given to you in a schedule, everything you eat. So everything's taken care of. So that is my time to kind of go, right, what am I doing? What's going on?
Yeah.
So I use it for that, to make my evil plans.
Yeah, well, I did lots of album drawing sleeves and stuff in the studio at Kirkstall. I'd just sit there and I'd be writing songs or just cutting albums, bring some scissors and some A4 size bits of paper, and they'd have the album design, and I'd be cutting album sleeves, 50, 60 album sleeves in an hour, and then I said, oh God, I could do a few more. Or I'd be drawing, I'd be writing my name on a clothes peg, because I used to give clothes pegs out as business.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Just have the name and then the number on the back. And so I'd have a bag of clothes pegs I'd take back home with me.
Yeah.
Be like a little piece worker. I remember trying to draw people while I was there, but it was, you really don't have a window to do that. You know, you think, oh, I'll have all day, I'll be sitting there doing nothing, but this person gets called. They say, oh, Janice, can you go and, we need you now, Janice. And you might have, and there's not a sort of, there's this false sense that
you are kind of
nothing happening, but actually, you're actually on the balls of your bum, you know. You're going to be going.
Yeah, that's true.
Tell us about the album. What's it called? Have you a title for it?
There's no kind of, there's a working title, but I think that'll change. It will be out on Leaf label again. And it won't be until September, October.
Right.
And so this is a three-way collaboration with me, Ross Downs, and Matthew Bourne. And it's very different from the first, or it sounds very different, but it's not, because it's still.
And you're the words. You're the person. You're in charge of the words, and the other lads, Ross and Matt, are doing the.
I mean, Debris was really a translation of the songs that I'd made over the years, but this is a new project. So as far as the writing of the music, it's done equally. It's not these songs didn't exist before Ross and Matt were on board, Debris stuff did. So it's more of a collaboration. But I am also the words and what's the other one? The sound. But also Matt Boyle, who is part of Boyle and Shaw, they contributed to words on the first album. And also, they have on the second album as well. Not that they know it, I just kind of dig into old stuff when I don't have any ideas of my own.
So do you ever play with other, like Matt does, like he lobs in a bit of show tunes every now and again, or a bit of Lionel Richie, do you ever customise an old...
Not really. I mean, when I have, because I do, maybe that's why we haven't really talked about show tunes, me and Matt Bourne, but I love all that. And when I've been doing live performances, I have, I love Les Mis, and I have kind of in between, it's maybe trying to fulfill my desire to be in those shows, which hasn't happened up to yet, obviously. There has been times I've kind of stopped a song and then gone, Cosette, it's turned so cold. You know, my kind of rendition of
Les Mis, because it's past your bedtime. And Matt's a bit like, oh, she's bloody good. I've turned the day away and soon it will be. You know, so, but that's the stuff that's always kind of at the forefront of my head. So when there's a, it just clicks
and
in.
And you've never stood in front of a, like an orchestra or a band and done...
No, you know, I'd love to do.
It's no business like show. Oh.
Well, this is, when I had a meeting with the label, I think kind of to their horror, when they said, so what are you trying to do with it? You know, they was trying to see how somehow it would marry with the first album. But I just said, it is, it's, you know, this is just the path. I'm trying to get myself to Broadway. This is all that this is, you know. So the first one was very, yeah. This is a bit more,
soon it's Streisand.
Yeah, and then
Streisand, here we come.
I can get myself in showboat. Yeah. No, but I love that. Opera, telling stories through sound.
Thanks very much, Keely, for joining us today. Keely's finishing off a new album, which comes out in a few months. Details can be found on her website, www.keelyforsyth.com, on Twitter at Keely Forsyth, and on Facebook, Keely Forsyth. You can listen to this again and download the podcast on iTunes, Mick Artistic's Ego Podcast. Further links can be found on our website, www.mickartistic.com. Cheers to all of you people who keep tuning in. And if you like what you hear, give us a review on iTunes and tell your mates about it. Off you go then. Bye.